Bergeron, a timeout. 2 seconds left. Giddy for the win.
Through the city where the legends play, Chi-town vibes on a sunny day, big red bus with the seats in line, talking Bulls all day, we stay on the grind, rolling down the lane in the big red bus, see Red, Fred and Doug bring the Bulls to discuss, from the Jordan days to the present fuss, it's gold in the convo, so ride with us.
Everybody, welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago. I look to my right, and lo and behold, it's the great one, Doug Tonis. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing pretty well. How do you think you did on that intro compared to Will Gottlieb the other day?
Do you think Will's impression measured up to the high standard that I set every show with the introduction? I thought it did. I thought he did great. He might even beat me. If you played it for 10 random people who had no idea what the show was about, I bet you 9 out of 10 would have picked Will.
Well,
especially if it was video.
If it was video, for sure, we'd all take Will. I mean, Will has got everything going. He's got the great hair, you know, probably Chicago Bulls' most eligible bachelor. If he's a bachelor, I don't know. Now that I think about it, maybe he's not a bachelor.
All right, that's a good question. I have no idea.
We cover the important topics.
On the show on Friday, so that'll be one of the first questions I ask him along with Cup Talk.
Sounds perfect.
I can't believe you didn't bring it up on the show, by the way. That was very hurtful.
I thought you would be super amped that I got the guys to say Big Red Bus like 1,000 times on the show. I thought of the things I could do.
That was great.
Dude, I almost lost it every time they said Big Red Bus. Cause like I just joked about it in like the pre-show kind of talk, and I didn't know they were gonna do it. And then Dave and Will just like both rolled into it, and like I was about to lose it. It was pretty funny. It was a fun time. It was great, man.
I really enjoyed it. I loved it. I thought you did great. Yeah, you know, only negative, it's obviously more entertaining when you're actually in the studio with them. So hopefully that will happen in the future. I know you had work issues, which caused the remote recording, but it was still awesome, man. I loved it. I thought it was great. Your banter with both of them was very entertaining. I listened to it like 3 or 4 times over the weekend, and I mentioned on X I was going to listen to it backwards to see if there was
Cup Talk,
you know, like one of those Beatles albums where there was any Cup Talk.
Oh, good stuff.
Oh my god, it was great though, man. Did you enjoy it? Like, what feedback?
I mean, like, look, anytime I get to talk to Will and Dave, it's awesome. You know, just like anytime I talk with you, you know. We've talked about this off air, but the main reason I do this show is just so I still have a reason to like hang out with you and chat, because like I think we're both so busy. If we didn't have this show, we just wouldn't get a chance to talk, right? Like, it's just, we have so much going on, and you know, like I try to get together with some of those guys sometimes, and it's really hard just to find time. And so it's amazing to chat with them. You know, I said on the show, I'm like so impressed with what a great job they've done. And, you know, you and I have known Big Dave for forever. Like, God, it's like probably 25 years or something now. Like, it's, you know, you probably longer. And like to see how amazing he's become at his craft, like over this period of time, you know, compared to me, like, it's awesome. Like, I would have said 20 years ago, like, I probably do a better job than Dave. And now it's like night and day. Like, Dave's like just amazing at it. Like, he's awesome. I want to go and like run out and buy all the products they do ad reads for. And Will is awesome. So like, I just like, you know, those guys are awesome, and like they do good content like every day. And you know, when I was doing the Bulls Confidential blog, like I know how hard that is. It's like so hard, especially at this time of year. So I just have like mad appreciation for those guys and the work they do, you know. It's such a grind, and, they just really do a great job. So it was awesome to be on there. You know, I'm almost embarrassed of my own lack of commitment in comparison to these guys. Like, they're so good. But, you know, we have our niche too. And I think we provide something valuable and fun and different. But, yeah, those guys are great. I would talk with them like every day. If somehow I could work it out with my normal day job, they're just great guys.
Well, yeah, you know how they say you like to see good things happen to good people.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it doesn't get any better and Big Dave. So that's number one. So, you know, he, everything he's got now, I'm so happy for him, and the level he's taken it to is just incredible. I love that's how you started out the show too. And Will too. Obviously Will's a lot younger, but man, he's really cutting a niche as kind of like the Zach Lowe of the Bulls area. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think that's a pretty big compliment. Like,
yeah, no, I mean, like, Will reminds me of me earlier in my podcasting days when I was like very serious and very analytical and did all the research when I had like more time to put into it. And, you know, it's like, it's weird to say, but like, and I'm glad people listen. Maybe they're never going to listen to us after this, but like, you know, I don't think I'm anywhere near as good at this as I was.
Yeah, they turned off about 5 minutes.
15 ago. Years ago. Like, you know, 15 years ago, I would have thought I was like one of the best Bulls voices out there. Like, maybe that's arrogant to say, but I would say my takes were like super unique, extremely well researched compared to what you would get on other media. And like, I feel that way about like Will now. Like, you know, he's really great. I love all the stuff he does. Yeah, and it's just, I don't have the time to do that now. Like, you know, my corporate life is very, very busy. I don't have the time to put into it that I once did. But I love those guys, and I love how good they are at everything they do.
Yeah, I mean, Doug, you are the podfather. I mean, I do know when we started, we were the third pod on Apple iTunes covering the Bulls when Mark Lewenthal and I started the Chicago Bullseye. And you were one of them. And the other one was, I think, the show Bulls Cast. I can't remember. I couldn't.
Yeah.
I can't,
Bulls Cast was out there very briefly.
One of the guys was this dopey Heinrich fan.
Yeah. Yeah. Bulls Cast was the very first show, but they didn't last very long.
Yes.
And then.
So you were second after them?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I always thought you were the first.
I think we started around the same time, but I know they were before me because Bulls Cast was the name I tried to get first before I settled on the Bulls beat. So they beat me by a teeny bit. But like I said, they didn't last a super long time. I think their show ran for maybe a year and a half or 2 years. And then Brian Cush, of course, our old buddy Brian Cush, running with the Bulls was
the greatest. Yeah, Running with the Bulls was fantastic. That's right. That was one of the early ones too. He had a show. I forgot about Brian. Oh my gosh, I can't even believe I said that. Talk about a voice for radio. Brian Cush and Running with the Bulls. Awesome dude. Was that before you? Was he before you?
I think I was ahead of Brian, but like, you know, you, me, like probably you, me, Brian, and Bullscast all hit within 6 months of each other.
07.
Yeah, so, I started in 2004.
2007 is when we started.
Yeah, so I started in 2000, no, not 2004. I think 2005 or 2006. I think it was my start. Anyway, whatever. I don't want to. Now we're really boring. We spent seven minutes just talking about how great all our friends are, which is, I mean, awesome because they're great people, but like not entertaining. You know. So let's move on
to the show. I will say though, I do feel like, you know, I always get this question a lot lately, and it bothers me. I'm going to bring this up, I think, on Friday, a little bit of like, why do you guys care about the Bulls? Why do you guys talk about the Bulls? And think about all the friendships that we've built over the years that started with this common denominator of being mad about this team, you know, or being in love with this team, you know, the Chicago Bulls. Like, that's how you and I got together. I still remember I would listen to your show driving on 290. Somebody sent in a question, talk about our show. And you were talking about how horrible the audio quality was. I reached out and then we became friends. And then what was the, Dave, obviously Dave, the first thing I asked him was if he was a Heinrich fan. I mean, right away, I loved him, you know, because he wasn't one of these, Heinrich's the greatest, you know, and he liked Ben Gordon more. So the immediate connection, and you know what I mean? Like, think about all these people in our lives that started because we were fans of this team, relationships that we built. Like, why would you just suddenly just walk away from there and give that up? I understand your frustration and stuff, but like, my bigger thing is, and we're going to talk about the Bears a little bit in this episode, because I do want to have like an ongoing weekly brief discussion on the Bears.
All right.
And we'll see how this season goes. But, you know, like, compared to the Bears, you never hear anybody talk about, hey, let's boycott the Bears, or let's, you know, stop supporting the Bears or stop showing up. Like, they've had a worse winning percentage than the Bulls almost every year of Acme's tenure. But nobody talks like that. You know, do you sense this? Do you see it? And why do you feel that's so?
I think that's probably true. People talk about it with the Bulls more. I think the NFL and NBA are fundamentally different in how you build a team. So I don't know that the record comparison is really viable in that sense. But I will just say, like, I always think it's weird when people try to discuss with others how they should behave as fans. Like, if you are a fan of tanking and someone else is like hates it, or if you're not a fan of tanking and someone hates it, or if you want to complain about ownership and someone's like, I don't care, I enjoy going to the game and watching with my family, or like, there's no moral value in sports. Sports are there to entertain. If you're entertained, you're entertained. If you're not entertained, don't watch. You know, if you're just so emotional about it that you think someone should do this thing and not watch whatever, like, you have no business in what anyone else wants to do or think about the team, like, and spend their dollars or whatever. Like, it's just a ridiculous position in general. So, you know, whatever. If you want to ban the team, I don't care. Like, go ahead. If you don't want to watch, don't watch. If you want to watch, watch. If you want to root for the play-in and as many wins as possible, go ahead. If you want to root for like super high leverage, high upside strategies to try and win a title and you don't mind being really bad for 5 years, go ahead. Like, we can discuss all these things. There's no morally correct answer to any of it, because there's no moral value in what entertains people, you know, in this sense. Like, it's just whatever someone wants to do. Like, I mean, I have opinions on what I think is best for different types of goals, but it's not for me to decide like how you enjoy watching this team or engaging with this team. It's for you to enjoy and decide.
I'm curious, what is your favorite game that you've ever been to in the United Center?
Oh, super easy. Game one of the 2004-05 playoffs, where they were chanting Nocioni at the end of the game. And I want to say, like, they kind of like won the game on, you know, it's like, I think Nocioni scored, and I think he drew a charge on Antoine Jameson at the end of the game to kind of like ice it. And like, people were just going crazy. It's the loudest I've ever heard the United Center. There's like all this pent up, like, we're excited about the Bulls being back in the playoffs after the Jordan era. That was awesome. It's my favorite game ever. And I've been to like a lot of memorable games. But that one is there's like two games that will always stand out to me in my head. That's one of them. And the other is the double overtime Ben Gordon crotch grab game against the Celtics in the...
No, you were at that game?
Which was at the 2006-07 playoffs.
That was game four, yeah. Against the 2009 playoffs.
One of my biggest regrets is I almost went to game six and I didn't. And that's like one of my favorite Bulls games of all time, with the steal by Joakim Noah. I would have loved to have been there in person, but I did not make it. But those two games like stand out to me the most as games I've attended in person. And I've seen the Bulls with Derrick Rose beat the Heat in the playoffs. I was at game one for that year. I was at numerous games where they beat the Heat in the regular season that year. Just tons and tons. I mean,
I was at one of those with you.
I had season tickets for like a gazillion like years. So like, I've been to like probably 300 or 400 Bulls games. And you know, it's weird. Like, you would think that Bulls playoff game would like really stand out because they went up 1-0 and you kind of felt like they might win the title. But it didn't stand out. Like I can't actually remember moments of that game in my head. Like, whereas I remember those two other games I mentioned, like, I remember those games, like, very explicitly. And so most of my strongest memories are kind of from that 04-05 season. That's my favorite Bulls season of all time. I've also been to a bunch of games where Jordan played, including a couple of playoff games in the Jordan era, just first round games, not like deep playoffs. So like, when you were like, the Bulls are just going to like annihilate this team. And those also, like, they don't really stand out in my head is like super memorable. So, like those games I mentioned, like, I don't think they're the best games ever or whatever, but they were the most memorable to me for various reasons.
You know, the reason I brought this up is because, you know, I do take a little bit of offense, obviously, with a lot of what Kyle Lee says, but, especially when he starts calling these people that show up in the middle of winter sheep. You know, I think this is something I'm definitely going to bring up on Friday. Because I do find it irritating with these movements that are like, hey, you're not a real fan if you don't, you know, start demanding change and you know, not showing up and not supporting the team and all this stuff. And I'm like, you know, what is the nature of being a fan? To me, it's like, it's a relationship between you and the team. And I don't care if it's a marriage or, you know, being a parent. you know, it's easy to have a great relationship when things are going well, but when things are going bad, that's kind of like the true measure of your worth, right? Like, I don't think it's, I knew tons of Bulls fans in the 90s. It was pretty easy to be a Bulls fan then. You know what? After they left, after Jordan left and Krause was there pre-Pax, that was the worst period of my Bulls fandom, but I still paid attention. I still cared. By the end of that period, 2003, it was pretty lonely. You know, and I would know when people would come up to me and talk about how about Heinrich last night? Yeah, he was 6 for 18. I never understood why people were like going nuts about him, but you know, I kind of digress. My point is, my best moment that stands out happened during the Three Alpha season, January 2nd. And then think about the Three Alpha season. The team, I think that was like one of the turning points. That was a team that it seems like everyone but Big Dave and I hated, you know, like, and I don't think you liked them that much either at that point, but I love that team. I think it was a very underrated team, and who knows what would have happened if Rondo didn't get hurt. But January 2nd, United Center, first games I brought Ava and Ben to. They were young kids. Jimmy Butler scores 52 points, and the Bulls beat Charlotte. And I'll never forget it. It was one of the greatest, you know, events I've gone to with my kids. And, you know, if somebody has a problem with me showing up at the United Center because I, you know, didn't send a message. There's a lot of good people who work there, and a lot of good people part of the organization whose livelihood depends on the success of the Bulls or people showing up. So, you know, it's fine. If that's what you want to do, you don't want to show up to send a message, that's okay. But you know, I'll be darned if you're going to, you know, call me a non-fan because I'm showing up in rough times. Like, pound sand, dude. Like, this is, to me, not even close to as rough as it was post-Jordan, pre-Pax. But those are just my general thoughts on it. I wouldn't give up that night in that Three Alpha season for 15 first-round wins in the interim. Honestly, I wouldn't. So, you know, this is Chicago. Unfortunately, there's not a lot to do in the winter. So I do feel like the United Center is a good place to go. And, you know, we've kind of beat the drum a little bit too long in this one. But I did want to bring it up because I am kind of thinking about, you know, a message hopefully on Friday if I'm on the show.
Yeah, I mean, I generally...
What are your thoughts? Any last comments?
No, I mean, I generally agree. Cowley is a complete troll. Like, he's not a serious person.
I know.
Like, he just isn't. Like, I mean, I shouldn't say that. Cowley's writing is fine. It's, like, actually fine. Yeah. His podcast is fine. Cowley as a Twitter persona is just a troll. So, you know, if you want to talk about him,
My point is, though, I did want to highlight Cowley. Like, Cowley's a Steelers fan. And they haven't won a playoff game in...
Dude, your opinion on that is so dumb. You're comparing, like, playoff wins.
I know you're
playoff wins to NFL playoff wins. You should compare advancements in the playoffs, not wins. So they're 0-0.
Regardless, Doug, at what point is Joe Cowley... Let's say they go on for another 8 years like this. At what point is he going to start calling people who show up at Heinz Field sheep?
Yeah, you know, like I don't care.
Is it that much different?
It depends.
What?
Cowley is a troll on Twitter. So, like, I don't really care to answer that question. Like, is Cowley going to be consistent?
He's also a hypocrite.
Yeah.
In this topic.
Absolutely. 100%. Cowley is a hypocrite on every topic. That's part of what being a troll is.
Okay.
There's no one who's read Cowley that's going to think, like, oh, wow, this guy is just super consistent in his opinions and really thinks deeply analytically about them. Like, he says things just to incite people, and that's it.
First of all, let me get your prediction on the Bears this year. Let's go a little bit into Bears talk before we finish up with some more Bulls talk. How many wins do you predict the Bears are going
to
have?
God, I have no idea. Like, I just have no idea what to expect from this team. Because it all comes down to Caleb Williams, right? Like, I'm not a deep Bears guy. I do follow the Bears, like, pretty closely. I will watch every Bears game this year, most likely, or, you know, at least 15 of them. And it just comes down to Caleb Williams. Is this guy ready to take a leap or not? Is Ben Johnson going to get him over the hump or not? I feel like the rest of the pieces are adequate. You know, certainly the pass rush is maybe dicey, but the rest of the defense I think has like the potential to be solid. So, you know, I don't know. It's kind of like I could see them winning like 12 or 13 games. Like if everything clicked perfectly, I could see them winning like 5 games if Caleb Williams just doesn't advance. And so, like, then the logical thing is, like, well, do you pick something in the middle? Like, just because you have these, like, really polarizing things and you won't be off as much. But I feel like it's going to be kind of, you know, more boom or bust. And because, you know, whatever, I'm just going to try and play optimist. I'm going to say 10 games.
Okay. I think they're going to win. I think they're going to be 7-10. I think the team's going to improve. They're going to be better. I think you're going to see a lot of flashes from Caleb Williams because he does have elite talent in terms of throwing the football. You know, but I just keep on going back. I was a Justin Fields guy. You weren't. I understand that. I understand all his negatives, held on to the ball too long, or a lot of issues with him.
Just to be clear, as a passer, I loved Justin Fields when we drafted him. Like, I liked Justin Fields a lot when we drafted him. I didn't, I quickly came to question those things after 2 years, though. Like, so it's I love Caleb Williams when we drafted him, but if he has a bad year this year, I'm going to be like, yeah, probably not. Like, you should show up by now. So, you know, you can like a guy and then you can change your opinion. So anyway, sorry.
Regardless of what you feel about Justin Fields, though, you have to admit that the Bears did very, very little to support his development as a quarterback. When you look at that offensive line in his first year, especially under Poles, you know, they finished with the worst record in football, I believe that was the year. I mean, that was an abomination of a line. And I know you think they got better after that. I disagree. Like, to me, the biggest issue is Braxton Jones was the left tackle for Justin Fields, and I think he severely hampered his development because the left tackle position for a right-handed quarterback is extremely important. And guess who's still the freaking left tackle for Caleb Williams is Braxton Jones. And I just – it's maddening to me. It's kind of like this issue with the Bulls where, you know, when you bring in Vucevic, you better have a power forward that can defend and really be elite athletically. Like, you know, look at what the Denver kind of did for Jokic. Jokic is a better defender than Vuce, but, you know, he's not a great center in terms of defense. Aaron Gordon is, right, in terms of as a power forward. He's a fantastic athlete and a really good defender. What have the Bulls done at the four? You know, Patrick Williams, who's a non-shot blocker, who's pretty good one-on-one, horrible off-ball. I mean, you know, the rookie last year. It's like just a huge major issue that hasn't been addressed. So that's why I think the Bears are going to have issues. They're always going to have back in there to kind of help out Braxton and not really unleash the potential of the offense. So I don't think that's bad. I think the division is a buzzsaw. Look how good Green Bay is. The Lions are good. The Vikings are good. Like, so it's to say they're 7-10 doesn't mean the Chicago Bears are a bad football team and it's better than last year. I think they're going to be better this year. I don't like their running backs at all. I don't like their left tackle, period. So that's my issue with the team. And until that gets addressed, it's not going to get better. And you highlighted the pass rushing issue too. So we'll see where it goes. But my bigger question is, why does there seem to be far less outrage when the Bears are bad and haven't won a playoff game since 2011 than there is for the Bulls? What's your reasoning or thinking behind that?
I don't think there's less outrage. I just think you're not as tuned into it because you're not as big a Bears guy as you are a Bulls guy.
Oh, Doug, I'm a huge Bears guy, and I will tell you that anytime I put it, here's the best illustration I could say. You know, for a long time when under Gar Pax, when the Bulls were going poorly, I was the lone voice in the wilderness out there saying that these guys were good. And I would just get hate tweets about you're dope. It's the exact opposite with the Bears. Unless you're talking about that they're good, you're a hater, you're a dope. It's completely.
Let me interject for one.
Sorry, one 180, excuse me.
Let me interject for one moment. I'll just say maybe it just depends on what areas you are talking. In the areas I have talked about with the Bears, I see rampant negativity about Ryan Poles and that he sucks ass. So, like I said, like it's just, I think maybe that's, and whatever. I am not into the Bears as much as the Bulls. So just my personal experience is different from yours. I would not say that those teams are treated differently. I see lots of like sell the team from McCaskey. We'll never win. They're the worst owners ever. Like I see that. I don't know. I'm not saying it's more than Reinsdorf. I'm just saying the same stuff, the same general stuff like is out there all the time. These guys are cheap. They're blah, blah, blah. Like I'm like, makes even less sense in the NFL because there's a hard salary cap. So it's like, it's super crazy. But, yeah, I don't know. I have not experienced it being markedly different. That's all I'm saying. So I think generally fans that are disappointed and care deeply often just don't have rational direction to put their angst because there's nothing you can do to fix it. So you just complain. But there's like nothing you can do to fix it. So you just complain. I see that all the time about any team that's unsuccessful for a long period of time.
Do you think the Bulls or Bears, which team is going to have a higher winning percentage this season?
I think they'll be, I would guess the Bears, but I would say could be a toss-up. You know, you're probably more right on your prediction about the Bears than me, but I want to play optimist before the season starts. I don't know that I put money on 10 wins, but I want to think it in my heart.
See Orange Doug.
I can't do it for the Bulls, like, because I just know basketball too well, but I don't know football well enough where I could kind of just like put blinders on and hope for the best, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm just in awe. Like, in my lifetime, the amount of joy I've received through the Chicago Bulls is 100 times any other team. I'm a Cub fan and I'm a Bears fan. The Cubs brought me tons of heartache until recently, but no team has hurt me more than the Chicago Bears. And I am old enough to remember, as a small child, 1985, and I am old enough to remember every single disappointing playoff loss after 85 when they should have won multiple games.
Can I ask you a question?
It's been a long.
What if I limit your sample size to the last 25 years? Mm-hmm. Now, which team has brought you the most joy?
Well, it's hard to compare anything to the Cubs winning the World Series in 2016. Obviously, it was a little bit of a rough year for me. I lost my mom that year due to a glioblastoma before the Cubs won in March of that year. But that victory, I mean, it's just 10 times the impact on anything else, just with the knowledge that they finally won the World Series.
Okay.
And, you know, so it's the Cubs. I would say that's a good question. So it's the Cubs. What about you?
You know, for me, it's still the Bulls. Yeah. I don't care about either of the baseball teams. Mm-hmm. Maybe I was nominally more excited for the White Sox winning the World Series than the Cubs, but I was excited for both. I was a White Sox fan growing up, but I didn't really follow either after high school and just gave up on baseball altogether. So maybe slightly more excited for the Sox. But I was, you know, just aggregate happiness for the city of Chicago when both won. But so for me, it's the Bulls. Like, I've gotten more joy out of the Bulls, even post Jordan, than I have out of the Bears, which is the only other team I followed. I followed the Hawks when they were doing really well, which was for a pretty good length of time. I actually was at the, Game 6 where they closed out the Stanley Cup, in the third title, which is the, 2013, I think it was. Is that there? I think it was the last one that they won on home ice, which I believe was the only one they won on home ice. And I got tickets to that through someone at work, and it was, you know, sort of a fluke thing that I ended up going. It's the only finals experience I have across any sport, which is funny because of the four major US sports, it's the one I watched the least. But somehow went to the Stanley Cup finals closeout game, which is kind of like a weird thing. I guess I shouldn't say that. I went to the Super Bowl the year the Bears went, in 2006.
2006. Yeah. And the game was played in 2007. Yeah. That's a great question though, Doug. I mean, the Bulls, I'll tell you who by far brought me the most heartache. It's not even close. It's the Bears, you know, 'cause they basically sucked for the vast majority of those years. I mean, they haven't won a playoff game since 2011. I just can't even believe it. Bulls were in the Eastern Conference Finals in the interim. But, you know, the Bulls, a lot of great moments there under Gar Pax, but it's still, there's that tinge of sorrow with what happened with Rose. You know what I mean? Like, I love that team so much. It was such a great story with the bench mob and Korver and all those guys supporting Derrick Rose and Noah. And Dang, and just a great team. And Taj Gibson, I mean, my gosh. I still think the apex of that entire Bulls run over the last 25 years was Game 1 against the Heat. The dunk that Taj had on Wade is, to me, the highest mountain that Bulls team achieved. So it's still below what the Cubs achieved in 2016. But yeah. great topic. Great. This was an entertaining topic for this time of year. You got to admit, there's not a lot to talk about. I think this was pretty good off the cuff.
We didn't even send you any prep. I mean, I never read your prep anyway, so that doesn't really matter. You know, like, it's. I mean, no. Well, I've said it on the air. Like, I don't know. I'm just. I find it's not actually an insult to you. It's like, I find that when we don't prepare and the conversation is more natural, it's better than if I prepare. Like, if I think about it too much, I feel like I'll be like, I don't want to be rehearsed. I want my gut instinct to be out there, and maybe it'll be bad and I'll say something dumb and you'll make fun of me. Maybe it'll be fine, but I think when you're rehearsed, it just like, then I don't know. I don't like that. I like being just completely shooting from the hip and seeing how it goes.
Last question. Let's talk some Bulls before we go.
We should do that. That makes sense.
So have you seen any Vegas? we integrated the Bulls in this conversation. A little bit more Chicago sports overall, but I think this is a good conversation. Vegas win totals. Do you know what they have for the Bulls? I'm pretty sure you have them as a diehard.
I thought I saw it earlier. It was like 32.5. Is that right?
Yeah, which I think we both agree is low. It's kind of
insane, it feels insanely low. Frankly. You know, like it feels insanely low. Like I'm not a gambler. Like I do not bet at all on sports. This just feels insanely low to me. Like I don't know how. Yes. I don't know how you look at it. Like I just, yeah.
And so that would put them. Do you know what spot in the 15 team conference according to Vegas? What seed?
11.
12. Five full games behind the 11th seed. Take a guess.
Who would they have 11? The Pacers?
Pacers are 10 at 38.5. Six games ahead of the Bulls, which I think is ridiculous. But, you know, the great coach, but
they don't maybe have more talent. Miami or Toronto?
Miami is at 9 with 39.5 wins. Toronto is 11 at 37.5. So they have Toronto with five more wins than Chicago Bulls. I don't know about you, Doug. I feel that the Bulls are a better team than the Toronto Raptors. What say you?
I've not looked at what Toronto's done this offseason, but it feels correct to me.
It's the same.
We were better last year, yeah. Right? Like, yes. And we closed the year. We closed the year stronger than we started it, and the way we closed it is the roster going into this year. And I'm not sure who Toronto has on their team that you'd be like, oh, wow, that guy's going to be so much better this year. So it feels to me like we should be much better than Toronto this year.
I'm going to give you 1 to 12, according to Vegas. 50. All right, and I want you to stop me when you say you think the Bulls could be better than that team. Okay?
Okay.
Cleveland Cavs, wait, sorry. 56. Sorry. 56.
I'm to stop wins. You.
Nick.
I'm to stop you when the yeah. Bulls can beat the team. So I think like the yes. Bulls.
I want you. I'm going to read the list for the listeners so they okay. know 1 okay. through 12. What Vegas has, and then you tell me, stop, I think the Bulls can be better than that team.
Okay. Is it
Cavs, 56.5?
One last thing. Is it can or will?
Yeah.
Because those are two different things.
Can.
So possible, can. But like, not necessarily.
Possible. Sure, but yeah, possible. Yeah, possible. Okay. Right. And then when you stop me, I want you to tell me, I think, what's the percentage
okay. of
the
Bulls can be better than that team. Okay, sounds good. All right,
let's go. Cavs, 0. Knicks, so the Cavs, they have a 56.5, the best team in the Eastern Conference. Knicks, 53.5, best team in the Eastern Conference. Let me just say, I think the Knicks are the best team in the conference. Who knows if they'll finish there. The Magic, 3rd, 51.5. The Hawks, 4th.
Could be better.
46.5.
I think we could be better than that.
Yes. And so do I. Like, I agree. What's your percentage? What's your percentage?
I don't know, like 20% maybe?
25%. Yes. That's what I agree, Doug. Like, why are the Atlanta Hawks so much better than the Chicago? I was just making this case with a friend yesterday. Like, I think Trae Young's the bizarro Josh Giddey. Like, there's a lot of, there's a lot of similarities. You know, one guy's tall, one guy's small, one guy, they both have a lot of deficiencies and a lot of great points. But, you know, one Trae Young's got a lot better probably range as a shooter. But think about those two players. Aren't they kind of similar in that you're probably going to have a limitation as a team to win a title with that guy as your best player, but you could still win a lot of games? I'm kind of working this out, thinking about this. But do you like that point, or do you think it's kind of nonsense?
No, I think you're onto something there. The difference, I would say, the primary difference, there's two. One is that Trae Young can shoot. And I think he can score through double teams, and he can kind of facilitate an offense and draw a lot of gravity. And I don't think that Josh Giddey can do that. And then the flip side is, like, Trae Young is going to cost twice as much even after Giddey resigns a contract. So, like, I don't think his marginal improvement is enough to justify how much he's paid. I would rather have Josh Giddey on his new deal, whatever it is, than Trae Young on his current deal.
I agree. And let me also add a 3B. Although Josh Giddey is not good defensively, I think just by the fact that he's 6'7" or 6'8", he's got a little bit more value than Trae Young, who is always going to be poor defensively, just the nature of his physique.
That's a complicated topic, because both of them you have to hide defensively. And then it just depends, like, what skill sets do you need around the player that you're hiding, and how easy is it to fill those skills with other players? Like, as an example, most teams may have like one really small guy that you have to hide defensively. And so Trae Young is not, even though he's a terrible defender, like, it's not uncommon that a team is trying to hide one defensive small guy. Now, for the Bulls, you can't bring in another small, bad defender next to Giddey, because Giddey is a bad, bigger defender. So, like, I don't know. I think they are bad defensively in different ways, and they cause different problems. And I don't know that one set of problems is easier or harder to work around. Like, it's complicated.
They're both complicated.
It's complicated. Though. Yeah, they're both complicated.
They're bizarro versions of each other, yeah. That I find. I got to bring this up with the great, the GOAT and Big Dave, because on Friday because I'd love their opinion on it. I think there is a similarity in both players, but it's a weird one, obviously. So they have them 4, and I agree with you. I think the Bulls are 25% chance better. So right there, let's stop there.
Yeah.
Can you imagine what's the city going to say if the Bulls are a 4th seed at the end of the season? Because I think that'd be freaking phenomenal.
They'll probably say it was a fluke. The East is historically weak, and we don't have a lot of upside to grow.
They won't care.
And all of those things might be true. Like I'll add on that, like, all of those things might be true. But whatever, if it happens, I'm going to enjoy the hell out of it. Like, I don't think this team has, like, a lot of upside. But kind of to our discussion earlier, like, sometimes that's okay. You know, like, in life, find what you enjoy. I love watching basketball. And, you know, I would love for the Bulls to be a contender, but there is no clean way to get there from here. There just isn't. If you're really bad, if you're doing whatever... I've talked over the last 4 years about a lot of super high leverage strategies of acquiring tons of draft assets and whatever. We don't really have that option on the table anymore, because we did not leverage it when we had all these older players. We let their value kind of die off. And so now probably the most reasonable thing I would do if I ran the team is, like, see if I can make the first round of the playoffs and have a generally enjoyable product that doesn't have a lot of upside. And I would rather do that than tank and only have my own draft pick and not have a bunch of other assets and not have a plan to get kind of back somewhere. So if that happens, I'm going to enjoy the hell out of the season. You know, I just named, like, the 47 win 2004-05 Bulls as, like, my favorite Bulls team of all time. Like, so you can really enjoy a season that doesn't necessarily have a tremendous ending. And this team is very young, right? Like, if this team won 47 games and basically all your important players are, like, 26 and under, like, shouldn't that be at least a little exciting? Like, I don't know. So I don't think there's championship equity here, but, like, enjoyable team to watch equity, I think, is there.
Yeah, absolutely. And plus their style of play. I mean, if they were a 46 win team with, you know, Tibbs half court offense, you know, milking the shot clock, man, I wouldn't want to watch it as much as this. Like, this is a fast paced, exciting team. I really enjoyed the end of last year watching a lot of basketball. The game against the Lakers is one of the greatest games I've ever seen, any Bulls games I've ever seen, and the finish of that game. So, yeah, 100% here. And I'm even going to one up you, Doug, and say that I don't think it's possible. I think it's possible the Bulls have a 5 to 10% chance of being even better than the Orlando Magic. At 51 wins.
Like, not unless the Magic get a lot of injuries. I mean, that's it.
They had a lot of injuries. That's right.
Only if they have a lot of injuries would the Bulls maybe be better. They're not going to be better than a healthy Magic team. And if you start going the injury route, then it's like it could be better than anyone. Right? Like, if Donovan Mitchell tears an Achilles to start the season, the Bulls could be better than the Cavs. So there's like a 1% chance on any team, you know, like, if there's enough injuries. But the Magic are... they're just head and shoulders above the Bulls on a talent level. We're not going to be better than them unless they have, you know, like, some kind of injury crisis.
Number 5, Detroit Pistons at 45.5.
Sure, we could be better than them.
Boston Celtics at 42.5.
Let me rephrase it. We can be better than every team left. Like, the only teams that I feel like we can't be better than unless there's major injury problems are the top 3.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say the top two, and you say top three, and I'm 100%. Yeah, I'm on board for this season, man. I don't know. I just the level of negativity, the level of apathy is just we've jumped the shark. We officially jumped the shark, and I saw it in the Okoro for Ball trade, which I don't want to revisit now, but I heard you talk about it on Friday. I agree. The reaction to it was bewildering to you, and the reaction to it is because every move this organization is going to make is going to be looked at with disgust. But I just don't want to become – I always talked about this. I don't want to become the evil parrot on somebody's shoulder. And the analogy I want to use is just imagine – think about, Doug, the five worst things that you've done in your life, 5 to 10 worst things. Or anybody listening to this, think about your five biggest mistakes, your five biggest sins in your life. And just imagine you had a parrot on your shoulder who repeated it over and over again everywhere you went. How many people would be wanting to have lunch with you? How many friends would you have? I think we're in danger of becoming the evil parrot on somebody's shoulder, just reminding everybody about how all the mistakes that Acme made. And there are plenty.
Can I phrase this in a slightly different way for you?
Sure.
Fan attitude towards a team is often a trailing indicator based on what has happened recently. So people were really happy about Acme even when they were doing really dumb things, because they didn't realize they were dumb yet. And then when they realized they were dumb, multiple years after they happened, they then got really mad. And now that anger is at a peak. And actually, over the last year, while I'm not thrilled about everything they've done, they've generally made much better decisions. But the anger is all left over from all of the bad decisions that most people loved in the moment and disliked afterwards. I'm not going to throw anyone under the bus, but there are podcasters I have listened out there that raved about some of the moves they now absolutely rail on and hate these guys for. And I think that's a really common attitude. The number of people when we made that Vooch trade who were like, oh, Acme is the greatest. The anti-Gar Pax. He is the best ever. And those same people saying that now hate him and point to that move as being a disaster. And so when I try to analyze the team, I try to always be a forward-looking indicator and not a current indicator or a past indicator. I didn't like the Vooch trade when it was made. We had a lot of discussions about it. And so now, I'll tell you, they're doing better than they were. A year ago, I was like, this is the worst general manager in the league by far, right? I said that on the show. And they've been a lot better this last year. And if you listen to the general fan opinion, it's like people are caught up in all of the negativity of the stuff that happened when they were really bad. And they're not necessarily yet appreciating the fact that some things have been better recently. That's not to say everything is awesome. But I don't think you can use fan outrage around the general manager as a really accurate sign of what they're doing today. It's an accurate sign of what they did 3 years ago.
Yeah, well said. I still like my parrot on the shoulder.
It's a good analogy. Yeah, it's a better analogy. It's very colorful, compared to mine. You have a really dark, black and gray parrot on your shoulder. We got to replace it with a macaw, get a big,
bright, just talking about my parrot. Actions at the U of I, exactly, with the twins, exactly.
I got to think of.
If you want to hear that story, email me.
You might as well just put it on the show.
People engaged
by emailing you.
Engaged with the big red bus.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying. I think.
Oh my god!
I think your little person story is a better story. I think for anyone who's not heard
we'll
that
have to
one,
repeat that.
Stick it out there. I try to tell people the story because it's so amazing. And I'm like, man, I just can't do the story justice compared to if you heard the whole thing. And I'm like, it is the funniest thing.
Yeah, maybe I should retell it in case anybody hasn't heard that. You know what? The other good story I had, I completely forgot about, but one of the listeners who asked for the audio clip sent it was my seduction technique, the surefire seduction technique of going to a log cabin. We'll tell that in the future. Do you remember this
one? I vaguely remember it. You were playing some song on a guitar or something.
All right, don't ruin it.
The guitar ruined it. Like you're like, I'm going to a log cabin, putting on a fireplace, and I got a sweater, but I say guitar, and now the story's ruined. Like I don't know where you're drawing the line there, my guy. Like,
don't ruin it. Let's save it for fireplace sweater season.
We might need a new show title. Like we're not really talking about the Chicago Bulls. We're not talking about the Chicago Bulls at all. I guess technically it's a big red bus. Maybe it doesn't have to be about the Bulls.
It's a metaphor. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As we plow through the streets of Chicago. And on that note, we're bringing it into the garage. DT, it's always good to talk to you, my friend. Until next time, let's go Bulls.
Go Bulls.